Thank you. And thank you for the warm welcome. And it's just a pleasure to see all of the names of the beautiful people from all over the world. It totally warms my heart and reminds me that we really are a global community, all of us, in this practice. And I'm very honored to be here. So as you know, my name is Rania Banks. And I am coming to you from the original land of the Cherokee peoples, which is now known as Asheville, North Carolina in the United States. We'll start with a guided meditation. And during this meditation, I'll be doing some embodiment practices, some suggestions for how you can really get in your body and not only experience the bodily sensations, but also connect to the body such that there is no gap between you and your body, right? But anyhow, whatever you experience, you experience. And then after the meditation, we'll do a little bit of somatic movement or stretching, and then I'll start in on my talk. And welcome. Welcome, everyone. So if you have an intention for your practice, typically or today, feel free to set your intention. And as if you have an intention or an aspiration that you're setting, see if you can let that aspiration land in your body, in every cell of your body. Filling your whole body, enlivening it. And starting out by taking those first few deep breaths in through the nose, out through the mouth. These are the deep breaths that you can hear. And consciously allowing your breath to generally move to whatever areas in the body as you breathe in that would enliven and balance your energy. Breathing into your feet and sensing your feet as you breathe in and breathe out from your feet. As if your feet are breathing in and out. Allow your right leg to breathe in and out. Noticing all the sensations in your right leg as you breathe. Breathing in and out of the left leg, sensing that left leg. Breathing in and out of your rear end and hips. Enlivening this area. Connecting to it. Breathing in and out of your lower back. Sensing your lower back, middle back, upper back. And if breathing in and out of these areas is not helpful, just sensing, having the felt sense of your upper back sensations here, your whole back. Sensing the aliveness. Bringing your breath and your awareness to the front of your body, your lower trunk. The reproductive area, the lower belly. Breathing in and out of this area. Sensing its aliveness, its connection to the rest of your body. Expanding the breath to your whole belly as it breathes in and out. Sensing the life, the movement, the energy in the belly. Breathing in and out of the chest and the heart region. And as if you're experiencing or connecting to this area in your body so intimately, like you never have before, perhaps. And noticing, how does this area of your body respond to this intimate, vulnerable, deep connection? And if you're able to connect to your hands, both hands, breathing in and out, sensing your hands. Your fingers, the tops of your hands, the palms, your whole hands. Perhaps connecting to the miracle of having the felt sense of hands. Sensing your right arm and time and space as you breathe in and out of the right arm. Sensing its aliveness, its movement, perhaps going in and out of existence even. Whatever you experience, seeing it clearly. Breathing in and out of the left arm. Sensing the movement, the energy, sensations, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. In the left arm. Breathing in and out of and sensing both arms. Both hands. Bringing this kind, accepting awareness and breath to your shoulders, as you breathe in and out of the shoulders, noticing any movement, sensation. sensations, lightness or weight. Breathing in and out of the neck, front and back. Perhaps sensing the throat. Connecting somatically with your neck. Perhaps like you've never done before. This is what it feels like to sense your neck. Breathing into your jaw and your chin. Letting go of the breath and just sensing what it's like to have a jaw. Jawbones and a chin jutting from the face. Bringing the same curious breath and awareness to your mouth and teeth, inside of your mouth. Breathing into your whole face for a moment. And now experiencing different parts of your face, your mouth, your tongue, your teeth, your lips, your nose, your sinuses, your cheeks, your eyes, eye sockets. Forehead and eyebrows, and then your whole head. Breathing into your whole head. Dropping the breathing into sensing what it's like to have a head. Perhaps sensing the brain's movements in the head. And now for the rest of the meditation, you can either connect to your typical object of meditation, or you can just sit and somatically experience your body. Staying with the felt sense of the body as it moves, its temperatures, its sensations, whatever calls out the loudest. Noticing gross sensations, very subtle, nuanced sensations. And doing it all by bringing a really kind, caring attention. for just the last few moments of our meditation. Once again, just sensing the body. Your body. And as if there's no gap between awareness and the body, just experiencing the body. Sensing the miracle of the body. All of the little beings and cells all working together, cooperating. Part of the nervous system that's keeping respiration and all of the different functions happening naturally. Sensing the wisdom of the body. Sensing the love, the deep caring, the emotions that exist in the body, of the body, the heart not separate from the body. Sensing for a moment the mind as part of the body, an extension, intimately connected. And just for a moment, sensing your mind, heart, and body united as one. And infusing your entire body, heart, and mind with loving kindness, with compassion, with a deep caring energy. Filling it from your toes all the way up to your head with deep caring kindness and love. Bringing aliveness to your fingers and your hands and your toes. Taking a few deep breaths. When you're ready, opening your eyes. And now taking care of your neck, perhaps moving your ears to your shoulders, breathing. You might hear cracks, moving your chin down to your chest. Feeling the intimate connection with your body as you move it in whatever way feels helpful right now. Taking care of the body as well as being in it. So I could sense you in our meditation. That was very pleasant. So today I'll be talking about embodied wisdom as the fruit of our Buddhist meditation practice, mindfulness practice, and how this wisdom leads actually to equanimity, to lasting peace, to help us deal with, you know, the inevitable ups and downs of life, and how this embodied wisdom can help us to access peace, contentment, regardless of what's happening in life. So I'll be talking about wisdom in general, about embodied wisdom. I'll give you a few Buddhist examples and stories, just to qualify calling myself, you know, giving these Buddhist teachings. I consider myself a Buddhist teacher. I studied 5 years with a Burmese Buddhist monk from Myanmar. He had brown skin. He had been a monk from the time he was 10 years old to modern day times. His name is Ujjodhika. Ajahn Ujjodhika. And also acknowledging that the roots of everything I'll be talking about, I gained through the Buddhist teachings from the Siddhartha Gautama's South Asian roots, right? And luckily for us, Siddhartha Gautama, whom we now call the Buddha, passed on his teachings with the hopes that they would be transmissible and valuable to all people in the world. Yeah. Age-old ancient teachings. But as I'm going through talking about embodied presence and wisdom, I would like you to every so often just, if you can, keep your awareness on your body right now, sensing the weight of your body sitting here, your body perhaps pressing against the chair or the cushion, whether your body feels light or heavy in different areas, the sensations, whether it feels comfortable or not. Yeah, allowing your awareness to just deeply drop into and rest into this physical form. And from this place, you'll be able to experience not only the body, but also the emotional body and the mind from this place. I like to think of if people, most people on this planet, if our bodies were a representation of where our energy goes to, I think most humans on this planet would have these huge heads, right? These huge heads and this little tiny body and legs, because most people, most of their energy and attention is on their thinking mind. And I'll talk a little bit more about this. And the actual root to our freedom is to be in the body, with the body, of the body, right? So I'll be talking about wisdom, panya. It's a Pali term in Buddhism. It comes from the root na, which means to know, and the prefix pa means correctly. So the English translation of the word panya is to know correctly. And often we hear panya as insight or knowledge or wisdom. To know correctly. So this implies that there's a correct knowing, and it also implies that there's an incorrect knowing, right? And in Buddhism, incorrect knowing is called ignorance. It's also called delusion. And what is that? It is not seeing things as they are. It's seeing things disconnected from reality, right? There's a today we watched a video in our Sangha, and it was Ajahn Shanti talking about the gap between reality and our experience of it, right? And what's usually in that gap is our thinking mind. It gets in the way of this huge head, kind of gets in the way of us having a direct embodied experience of what's happening right now. So the Buddha taught there were three different, they taught a lot of different kinds of wisdom. I'm going to be talking about the three types of wisdom that he taught. The first is Sutta Maya Panya. And this wisdom is obtained from listening to others, to be instructed by others, by reading sacred texts. And this type of wisdom we can acquire, but it's dependent on an external source, right? And it helps us and our spiritual teachings to have this knowledge, this information, but this information alone does not lead to the attainment of freedom from suffering, which is the fruit of our practice. As we suffer less, there's more contentment, more inner peace, typically. Then the second kind of panya is Chintamaya Panya. It's the wisdom attained from one's own thinking, one's own rational mind, when we grasp the meaning of things. And this happens by us intellectually analyzing something to see whether it was logical or rational, whether it was helpful or not, right? So we can apply the theory of the Dhamma and analyze it to our actions, explain it to others. But even this understanding of the teachings and this type of analyzing mind does not also obtain to liberation by itself. It helps us to be able to see things, but it's not the liberating wisdom. So the liberating wisdom is bhavana maya panya. This wisdom is obtained by practicing mindfulness. So the only way that you can gain this wisdom, this is the one that liberates you from suffering and brings more contentment and peace, according to the Buddha. So formal mindfulness practice, where we sit formally to like we just did, and informal mindfulness practice during the day, where we bring our awareness and our mindfulness to the direct our direct experience of what's happening each moment, the truth of what's happening each moment. And there's no better way to connect to what's true, what's happening in this moment, than to be aware of the body. Right? So this wisdom has also been called Vipassana Bhavana wisdom. If you've gone to a lot of Goenka retreats, you've heard of Vipassana Bhavana. And Vipassana Bhavana is just mindfulness meditation, trying to see things clearly each moment. And the meditator makes a wholesome effort to constantly see things. The nature of reality. The nature of reality in the worldly realm, right? A lot of people want to transcend the worldly realm and go immediately to the spiritual. But the route to this, the spiritual is through the worldly realm. So we bring this astute awareness, this mindfulness to all conditioned things in our experience, to the body, to all conditioned things in our reality. And we learn the nature of reality as it is. We learn to see that everything is impermanent. And when we cling, we suffer. And we see that it's not personal, that we're not in control of this, this whole thing. A lot of things happen out of our control. And it's this clear seeing, moment to moment, day to day, that sets us up for our freedom from suffering. The more we see things clearly, the more the mind, heart, and body will let go of things needing to be anything other than the way things are. Right? Yeah, we begin to intimately connect to the way things are, our direct experience of phenomena as it arises, true nature. At first, when I started these teachings, I didn't quite understand what I went to some Goenka Vipassana retreats, and Goenka teaches that this freedom comes from directly experiencing our bodily sensations. And that through these sensations, the totality of our nature manifests itself, right? And our freedom comes through being with our bodily sensations. And at first I argued in my mind about that. No, not just bodily sensations. We need to be aware of our mental sensations and our emotional sensations too. But as I did this practice with Goenka, I saw that I experienced the mental and emotional sensations in the body. So we experience all of life with the body, through the body, right? The Buddha taught that being born as a human being is the highest possible place to be born for your chance of liberating, because the body gives you just the right amount of pain and suffering and bliss and joy to be able to awaken in this lifetime. Right. So I don't know what your upbringing was like, but I was raised in a family. My family were school, universities, and most of my life, the emphasis, almost obsession, was on first acquiring wisdom, the first wisdom, Sutta Maya Panya, acquiring, learning from books and others. Right. And as I remember being a child and teenager growing up, the ultimate goal that I was taught was to learn as much as you can and to acquire this knowledge, and then you'll be wise, you'll be successful, you'll be happy. And I watched as I was growing up, my family members studying day and night, acquiring more knowledge, and then they would sit around and argue and compare and compete with one another for who knew the most in every subject matter that came up. And I was watching this thinking, this doesn't look wise to me. It doesn't look like it'll bring me happiness. It looks like competitive and unkind, actually, arguing. And I can tell you that as a young adult, I realized that all the knowledge that I'd learned earlier in life, that none of it was helping me be more at ease in my heart, in my mind, in my body. And maybe I was able to make more money and be more successful in that way, but not be at ease. Until I started practicing meditation and following the Buddhist prescriptive path, then I started experiencing more ease. Many practitioners come to this practice with a misunderstanding that about the second wisdom, the Cittamayapanya, that if they can figure out why they're feeling what they're feeling, they can figure out why the mind is analyzing or obsessing over something, then they will suddenly be free of suffering. Poof, they'll magically stop doing that, right? So they're basically doing the second one, which is analyzing their experience. And I can tell you that analyzing your experience often will help you see what leads to what, but it will not free you from suffering. It will not necessarily lead you from stopping really deeply rooted habit patterns. In fact, you'll be able to see yourself enacting them over and over again clearly without being able to stop them originally, because the analytical mind cannot stop these conditioned habits, right? One of the participants in one of my groups that I was leading this past week said that he noticed that he gets caught up in reactivity, even though he knows better, and he still can't stop himself sometimes. And have you ever had that experience? Yeah. So knowing better doesn't always stop us. Only sustained mindfulness of our reactivity, bringing our awareness to the body, to the heart, to the mind, sustained awareness of the reactivity in the body, right? That is what breaks these patterns. That's what breaks these reactivity patterns. Not the analytical mind, the bare experience right there. So we want to connect to the reactivity as sensations in the body, emotional sensations, and do our best to be with them. Can I be with this right now? Can I hold this with kindness? Can I see it clearly? Right? Can I practice the third wisdom, the Vipassana Bhavana? There was a story in one of the suttas. I don't remember the name of the sutta in the Majjhima Nikaya. It was a story about the earth diggers. And they a lot of wise other spiritual sects, there were hundreds of different spiritual sects during the time of the Buddha. And they heard that he was an enlightened master, and they would seek him out to come tell him what they did to gain freedom from reactivity and to be more happy. So this one person came and said, "We're the earth diggers, and we break and cut through our reactivity and negative mental states by moving the earth." And he was saying, "What?" So they brought him to show where they live. And here they had dug these huge chasms. They had shovels and huge mountains all around. And basically what they did, their practice was anytime they had a negative mental state, reactivity pattern, they would run and grab a shovel, dig a shovel full of dirt, and throw it up on the mountain. Right? And so they asked Buddha, you know, they were bragging about their practice and asking what he thought. And he said, well, digging the earth is not going to stop your reactivity patterns. It's not going to stop unwholesome mind states. And then he went through and he gave him a teaching on how to meditate, how to bring mindfulness, how to bring this sustained awareness to their experience from moment to moment, right? And that only this would create, will stop their negative habit patterns. He said, look at all the mountains around you and you're continuing to dig. Is that not proof enough that what you're doing is not working? Right. So, I've been through my own interesting transitional stage from the mind to the body with my practice. And I remember about 10 years ago, I was talking to a medical doctor, medical doctor who was also a holistic doctor too. He practiced both. And he asked me if I wanted to ever rent or use his meditation space because he heard I led meditation. And then I said, I've got a space, but what is your space like? He said, well, what kind of meditation do you teach? And I said, well, I'm a Buddhist teacher. I teach Vipassana meditation. And he said, oh, God help me. I don't want a bunch of Buddhist meditators in my space. And I said, what? He said, they're the most disembodied people I've ever met. They're all in their heads and not in their bodies. And honestly, people need to be in their bodies if they want to heal. And I listened to that and I was like, that's your experience of Buddhist meditators? And he said, yeah, that's been, I've gone to a lot of Buddhist groups. And I said, well, if they're doing their practice correctly, they would be embodied, not in their heads, right? Because what is our practice? Our practice is to come, is to be in the direct experience, our direct experience each moment that we can in our bodies, in our hearts, in our minds, moment to moment, our direct experience. And if we're doing that, we're going to be aware of our bodily states. But, it is true that when I first started practicing and learning about Buddhism, that there seemed to be an emphasis on the purification of the mind and purification of ethical behavior. And it didn't seem to have much focus on embodied, it seemed to have more of a disembodied approach. The Buddha started out with ascetic practices, abusing the body, and then there seems to be suttas that can be translated as transcending or ignoring the body. But the more I studied the suttas, the more I realized that there's a very strong somatic dimension to the liberation taught through this practice. Very strong somatic. I actually started looking for it because I was like, is this all, is this disembodied? No, it's not. In fact, if you study the Satipatthana Sutta, the four foundations of mindfulness, the first foundation is mindfulness of the body, right? The very first foundation. And it goes on a long time about the body. The Buddha gives instructions on how to carry the body, how to sit, what posture to have, to mindfully be aware of the breath as you breathe in and out, to remain focused on the body and the inside of the body, outside of the body, to be ardent, alert, mindful, to be aware, mindfully aware while walking, standing, sitting, lying down, however the body is, posture is, to be aware of it and discern it as it is, these teachings. And then he went on further to say, going forward or going somewhere and returning mindfully alert and aware, looking forward, looking away, flexing and extending your limbs, carrying something, you're aware, eating, drinking, chewing, savoring, urinating, defecating, even when you're falling asleep, waking up, talking, being silent. You're supposed to be ardent and fully mindfully alert, right? And then if you study the jhana, instructions for jhana, he describes how the breath is experienced in different jhana states, how the breath and then it disappears and how the body is effused you know. So a lot of his descriptions and a lot of the suttas describes a bodily experience, right? Being aware of the body, its physical communications. If we do this practice correctly, there's no disconnection between our bodies and our experiences. There's no duality. There's no separation. There's no awareness of the body separate from the heart, separate from the mind. Eventually, at first, maybe we start that way, but eventually we start experiencing all of this in the body, with the body. Everything reverberates through the whole body. Any thought we have reverberates, is felt in the body. Any emotion we have is felt in the body, with the body. Right? Wisdom, this vipassana panya, seeing things clearly with wisdom, is embodied wisdom. It's a direct experience, seeing things as they are. Sometimes these are called insights into the nature of reality, the way things are. But, you know, it takes honesty. It takes a commitment to truthfulness, satya in Buddhism, to being truthfully seeing our experiences as they are. Because if you're really aware, you'll notice that most of the time the mind makes up delusional stories. It does not see things clearly. It sees things the way it thinks things are rather than the way things are. So it's a commitment to let go of arrogance, to let go of thinking that we know, and to be vulnerable and imperfect, seeing things as they are, as they are. You know, this can be experienced a lot of different ways. I used to go to retreats pre-pandemic every January and February at the Forest Refuge, and I'd go do a 2-month-long self-retreat every year. And I had this walking hall that I really, you know, was using regularly, and I noticed that there was a bug. I don't remember what kind of bug it was. It was crawling around this walking hall, and oftentimes it was going around the windows, going up and down the windows, looking for a crack or somewhere to get out of the windows. Sometimes it was on the ground, you know, looking for a door or some way out. So when I walked down this hallway, I was being very conscious of this bug. I didn't want to step on it, didn't want to kill it. I considered it my walking partner sometimes. You know, oh, there's the bug trying to get out. And every so often I would just stop my walking meditation and I would just watch the bug for a minute or so, send it some loving kindness and continue on. And here I was doing this embodied, mindful walking meditation, fully in my body, aware of each step, aware of, you know, this bug to make sure that I'm not stepping on it. And at one moment, as I was walking and saw the bug out of my peripheral vision, I had this full body blush insight. Oh, just this deep knowing that this bug was desperately trying to get out when it was like 30, 20 degrees outside, maybe lower, with, you know, Boston, Massachusetts, 6 feet of snow on the ground. It was desperately trying to get out. It didn't want to be where it was. It was looking to get out, right? And at that moment, I saw that I had a very subtle desire to get out of my own experience. That all this walking meditation I was doing, all this sitting for 2 months long, that, you know, some striving, some energy. I had wholesome motivation, but I also had this very slight nuanced desire to escape my reality as it was. Phew, flash. And then with this insight came this direct relaxing into things as they were. You know, the pain and suffering caused by trying to get out of where I am, like this bug, is causing so much stress. So I was able to relax and accept and be happy peaceful with where I was without needing to get anywhere else. Right? One of my students the other day, she was talking in our group of one of the sanghas I lead, that when she's reactive or troubled, she brings awareness to the sensations in her body, her heart, and her mind. And then she just waits patiently for the wisdom to arise. I was happy to hear that because that's what I taught her to practice. But she said it may take hours, it may take days, it may take weeks, but eventually wisdom arises. And then I asked her to tell everyone, well, how do you know that the wisdom has arisen? And she said, I can feel it. It's a full body knowing. I just know in my body. Right? So bringing awareness to our experience, being with our bodies, these deep and liberating insights happen. But I tell you, they're not going to happen if we're obsessed with our thinking mind. How do we get out of the obsession with the thinking mind? Dropping our awareness into the bodily sensations, experiencing life with the body, through the body. In the Majjhima Nikaya's Brahmaya Sutta, there's one of the quotes is, when Honorable Gotama looks, he does so with his whole body. So they're talking about the Buddha. He looks with his whole body. He sees with his whole body. So when you hear, you look, and you see, can you look, see, and hear with your whole body? Not just your eyes or ears. So I'm going to read you Walk, Don't Run, and I'm going to ask you to see if you can hear this with your body. This is by Rob Bell. Walk, don't run. That's it. Walk. Don't run. Slow down. Breathe deeply. And open your eyes, because there's a whole world right here within this one. The bush doesn't suddenly catch on fire. It's been burning the whole time. Moses is simply moving slowly enough to see it. And when he does, he takes off his sandals. Not because the ground has suddenly become holy, but because he's just now becoming aware that the ground has been holy the whole time. Efficiency is not God's highest goal for your life, neither is busyness, or how many things you can get done in one day, or speed, or even success. But walking, which leads to seeing, now that's something. That's the invitation for every one of us today and every day, in every conversation, interaction, event, and moment, to walk, not run. And in doing so, to see a whole world right here within this one. So as you go through your day, seeing if you can't experience your life with your body, through your body. And it's a beautiful thing, the body, once you connect to it. It is your refuge. And I'm pointing to something that may be your experience in the future. I'm hoping that it you might be able to connect to it such that it's your refuge. Even pain can be a refuge if you can bring mindfulness to it. Easier said than done, but it's quite a practice. And the Buddha talked a lot, and I'll end shortly. The Buddha talked a lot about the grace and the beauty of being with the body. And there are descriptions of him. As the Buddha's gait, he steps beautifully as he walks, placing his feet mindfully with precision and equilibrium. Absolutely relaxed, he moves in harmony and precision with no excessive effort. He does not lean his hands while sitting, nor rest his jaw on his hand. When he sits down, he doesn't drop his body and throw himself on the seat, but seems to gently and mindfully bring down the weight of the body to the seat. Right? So these descriptions express an advanced bodily awareness, a somatic understanding of the grace, the beauty, and connection with the body Yeah, so embodied, knowing that through being embodied, this amazing wisdom will arise, the knowing of how to respond to each moment. We still need the other two types of wisdom, obviously, but we don't want to shortcut the third, mindfulness. Clear seeing through our practice is the key to that. Here's one last poem that I'll read before I end, by Walt Whitman. It's called Miracles. Why, who makes much of a miracle? As to me, I know of nothing else but miracles. Whether I walk the streets of Manhattan or dart my sight over the roofs of houses toward the sky, or wade with naked feet along the beach just in the edge of the water, or stand under the trees in the woods, or talk by day with anyone that I love, or sleep in the bed at night with anyone I love, or sit at a table at dinner with the rest, or look at the strangers opposite me riding in the car, or watch honeybees buzzing around the hive of the summer forenoon, or animals feeding in the fields, or birds, or the wonderless insects in the air, of the wonderlessness of the sundown, or of stars shining so quiet and bright, or the exquisite, delicate, thin curve of the new moon in spring. These, with the rest, one and all, are to me miracles, the whole referring, yet each distinct and in its place. Thank you. Thank you so much for your listening, your attention. Yeah. So in a minute, I'll open it up for questions. And before we get to there, I just wanted to reiterate, thank you, Kelly, reiterate the whole Dana, practice as a Buddhist practice. If you can afford to give, if you feel like you've benefited from the talk today or the teachings, this is how Sangha Live keeps this beautiful international connection with all of us on air. They have so many offerings, classes and weekly Sangha. So if you can afford to give, that would be great and very much appreciated. All right, so let's look and see if there are any questions. Now, you can either type it into the question, or you can come. I think it was said that she could come online, show your face too, either way. Okay, first question. Can you address the challenge of being at ease with what is, juxtaposed to have a strong preference for something else, especially when harm seems to be likely? Yeah, there is a natural predisposition. The body naturally goes into fight, flight, or freeze mode when it's experiencing danger, when it feels that harm to oneself or someone we care about is happening. It's a natural reaction, right? So what am I going to be with? Oh, thank you all. What am I going to be with? I'm going to be with the fight, flight, or freeze response that's happening right then and there. I have told this story. I had a car accident a few months ago. And I was driving and was rear-ended, actually. But what was happening is the traffic was all stopped. So I stopped and I'm sitting there waiting for it to go. And then all of a sudden I got slammed in the back really hard. And luckily, I had enough space between myself and others to not hit the car in front of me. And then I looked in my rear view and the car was leaping up and it slammed into me a second time. Right. So this guy hit me twice. Like, who hits you twice? Anyhow, but he got hit by another car, long story. But at that moment, I noticed there was fear. There was fight, flight. There was my anxiety was really high. My body started shaking. There was sweating. There was perspiration. There was, all these different emotions. And so I got out of the car and I got off the road. I got us and saw that two other cars were involved. And I suggested, you know, we were in the way of getting hit more. So I said, can we just move over, you know? But anyhow, I brought full mindfulness to that whole experience. Now, if somebody was drunk or doing something that's causing harm, if I am fully mindful, then I can respond to reduce that harm, right? But if sometimes there's something to be done, sometimes there's not. But we're just mindful of, we let go of our strong preference. Of course, I had a strong preference that I wasn't caught in a three-car pileup that day. But that's the way it was, right? Oh, preference for not being shaking, standing here, quivering in shock experience. But that's what it is. So it takes a commitment to being with what is and to responding to harm with compassion for ourselves and others. Because people who are causing harm are suffering greatly. I hope that was helpful, Sheila. The what Buddhist sutta or teaching was the basis for the talk? I quoted several suttas, but the main one was the Satipatthana Sutta. Sati means mindfulness. Patthana means four foundations. I'll put it in the... it's also called the four foundations of mindfulness. Right? So that's in the... reminds us of the author of Walk, Don't Run. Oh, that's nice. Thank you, Lucy. All right. Would you say a few more words about how to use practice to work with daily physical pain in the body? I try, but would like to hear more from you, Lillian. Thank you for asking that question. So mindfulness, there's a certain range of intensity that's easy to be with, easier to be with in our experience, right? So very subtle, if this is the range from here to here, and this is really intense, 10 in intensity of sensation, here is one, there's a range that it's easier to be aware of. The very subtle sensations are harder to be aware of, and the very strong intense sensations, if they're painful, can be hard to be with. So we practice being with our body all of the time, even when the sensations are not painful. I used to have severe upper back pain, and I would bring awareness to the painful sensations. Yesterday I was having stabbing in my right knee because I had my booster shot and flu shot, and I've been really feeling badly this last couple of days. But anyhow, so we practice being with the painful sensations by breaking them down into the specific direct experience. Stabbing, tingling, pressing, pressure, heat. Stabbing. So I can be with stabbing, but I can't be with pain. I can be with pressure, but I can't be with pain. You know what I mean? So the actual sensations themselves, if we can be with each sensation as they arise, pass away, they're easier to be with than if we're with the whole idea of pain. So the pain often, if this is a scale from, 1 to 10, the painful sensations might be, 4 or 5. But then if I hate the pain and I resist the pain, then I'm going to increase the unpleasantness of my experience to a 9 or 10. Does that make sense? So it's the resistance to the painful sensations, the not wanting the stabbing or the tingling or the pressure, the pulling, that causes the most amount of our suffering. But it's a practice, and it's not easy. So what we do is we practice, okay, let me see if I can be with these painful sensations for a minute or two. And isolate, see each one clearly with my clear mindfulness. And then when it becomes intolerable, and now I'm adding to the suffering because I hate it so much, then go to breathing into that area compassionately, bringing energy, sending loving kindness to ourselves, distracting ourselves in some other way, maybe doing some stretches to bring in some energy. There's also that pendulating where I'm with painful sensations for a minute or two, and then I go to some pleasant place in the body that feels really comforting, and I rest there for a minute, rest my attention there, and then going back to the painful sensations and then back to the pleasant area. I have actually done so much awareness of unpleasant sensations that at one point of about 10 or 15 years into my retreat practice, I realized I was looking for unpleasant, painful sensations because I almost liked them. I was like, oh my God, I'm becoming a masochist. But then when I explored that, I saw that I had, there was boredom, and I was looking for some intensity to distract me. So the true experience was boredom. But anyhow, so that's one of the ways to be with painful sensations. Many, I hope that was helpful. Easier said than done. But we practice now being with our body as it is. Unpleasant, pleasant, neutral. Unpleasant, pleasant, neutral. Sensation, unpleasant. Yeah. Some people like to rate the... You might rate, oh, it's a 9. Yeah. It's a 9 out of 10, or it's an 8. That can, some people like to name their pain and talk to their pain and, you know, have a dialogue with. There are a lot of really skillful means working with pain. So I would say to try different things and see what works, but try to be as mindful as you can of the sensations as you if possible, and that'll reduce, that'll definitely reduce the pain. Yeah. You know, I don't remember the Earth Diggers, but I know it was in the Majjhima Nikaya, the Middle Discourses. I was looking for it before this, and I couldn't find it. So I just remember it. Yeah. All right. Any other questions, comments? So while we're waiting for the next question to arise, being in your body, always connecting with the body, hearing me through the body, reading with the body. Okay. How to reconcile meditation on awareness of the self with embodiment. Because it often feels to me that the body somewhat dissolves until a sensation arises. Is the experience of awareness somewhat misleading, wrong without awareness of the body? Good question. So as we bring this embodied, we hear with our whole body, we see with our whole body, we're aware of sensations. We will see that awareness arise and they pass away, and there are times when there's nothing. In fact, if we're doing this practice regularly, we will have the direct experience of not self, selflessness. Whereas the body's dissolving in and out of, it's dissolving in and out of experience or awareness. So what is our experience then? It's usually one of spaciousness or emptiness, nothingness. That place is usually very, very peaceful with no thought. And it's just a very restful, restorative experience, to be aware of awareness, dropping into awareness itself right then. So mindfulness, connection, deep connection with our experience of reality without any gaps, we'll have this experience in reality as it really is. It isn't the solid three-dimensional, you know, existence as we think it is. It's actually everything's waving in and out of but we have that insight through embodied awareness in the body, with the body, right? And so then we start to experience the full breadth of who we are. We're not just this body, heart, and mind. We also experience our deep inner connection with all beings. We feel the thread, our interconnected thread with all that is. Because in this space is everything. In this space is nothing. As the body, awareness of the body dissolves into awareness itself. So that's the fruit of our practice. It's not a mistake. It's not misleading. I think, you know, a lot of people can go into awareness of awareness without going to the body because they're really good at connecting with spaciousness. And that's great. And I think that's a practice in and of itself. But we have to look at our intention for doing that, right? What is our intention for preference of the space? Are we using spaciousness or, you know, not connecting with our body, but awareness of awareness itself to avoid dealing with life? Are we trying to transcend the body? Are we trying to escape? If we are, then that motive, then we're wasting our time meditating. Because true wisdom happens in the relative realm. We have to get some skillful means, skillful understanding and wisdom in the relative, in the human, in the physical realm, right? So as we connect to and understand how we're relating in the physical realm, we're working with our habit energy patterns. We're disembedding and letting go of these strong habit patterns. We're being more and more with the body. We're intimately connecting to things as they are. Then we start experiencing the other part of our true nature. We're not trying to escape our lives. We're not trying to change our lives. We're not trying to manipulate anything, right? It comes from a deep embodied connection with what is in the relative realm. Then we start experiencing the ultimate spacious emptiness as part of who we are, not as something to escape to. But most of us have that real subtle nuance. Oh, if I could just be a little more peaceful, or if I could just be happier and escape this. But the truth is, it's through deep, intimate connection with what is arising this moment, which will have us know our true nature. And then what happens if you have experience of who you really are? And then you'll want to, I want it again. So the human mind will do that thing, you know, or, oh, that was wonderful. I want to do it again. So just notice the craving, the clinging to wanting things to be a certain way. I think Jack Kornfield, he says the mind is shameless. And I think it's shameless, but I also think it's funny. So what can I take away? I think that was a good question. Thank you. What can I take away from the repeated experience of feeling too full after eating too much? Well, Cindy, I would suggest that you bring mindful awareness to that. You know, after eating too much, to just sit and be with the sensations of the body, the stomach feeling really full. Noticing if these sensations are pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. Noticing if there's still hunger there. Because oftentimes the hunger that we think we have is not true hunger for food. It's hunger for something else. Right? So if we're still hungry after eating, but our stomach is uncomfortable because we've eaten a lot, I would explore that hunger. I would explore the hunger before you eat. The experience of eating and the fullness afterwards. Mindfully bring your awareness to the sensations in the body. And then usually what you'll do is you'll have some insight into what you're really wanting or needing. What nurturing is the body really looking for that it's not getting out of food? That's why it's eating so much, right? And I can't tell you what that is because that's your own personal experience. But I can tell you that, you know, there's a lot of different things. It could just be excitement. It could be unconsciousness. It could be a lot of things leading us to eat too much. It could be that we've been craving that food all week. And now that it's here, we're, you know, we just get a little carried away. Play around with it. Really explore it. And if you need guidance with someone on the path, that could be helpful. All right, the person who was causing PTSD in me is now on his dying path. I thought I was over it, but now realizing things pop up. Feelings of disappointment that the body still reacts to what happened 30, 40, 50 years ago. It's difficult to be with what is. You know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, and it's still difficult. I'm just, you know, want to be with that. I just really want to honor you and your pain. Yeah, that's hard, right? It's a deeply rooted pain body you have. And compassion is the only answer that makes sense to that kind of pain, right? For yourself and for others, not, you know, not pity, but compassion, deep compassion. Wow, that's a lot of suffering going on there. And what I found is that a lot of times I think something's resolved and then it comes up again because there's a new layer of healing that needs to happen, right? The Buddha taught that our what we're experiencing in this lifetime could be a conglomeration of three different lifetimes before this one. I don't know if that's true, but it feels true to me because sometimes some pain is so deeply rooted that it just feels like it can't possibly have all come from just this lifetime, right? I don't know if this is true, but it feels energetically like, wow, this is a huge junkyard of pain body to heal. And so what we do is we just say, oh, okay, this is hard. We allow ourselves to be compassionate with ourselves. And you have one of two choices. You can escape and say, I've had enough. Or you can say, well, okay, the next layer is arising to be healed. And look at how far you've come. You know, you've come so far. I'm sure you have healed a lot already. On the spectrum of, you know, from where you were to where you are now, I'm sure you've moved forward. So we tend to focus on where we haven't gone. I would say focus on where you have gone. Be compassionate with yourself, really kind and compassionate with yourself, and then choose to deal with whatever's arising, right? And know that sometimes it is difficult. They said that this path is simple, but not easy. That's so true, especially when you have something like that. Here's another comment. I often feel that when trying to apply mindfulness to the body, when I'm in the midst of an emergency, like an argument with my partner, I can get easily overwhelmed by the sensations. Any tips aside from perhaps breathing deeply? and running away. LOL, that's great. Yeah, it's a practice, right? It's a practice. So we know when we've reached our limit and we're going to just act like a fool and say things we really don't mean. So at that point, it might be helpful to remove ourselves. There's a certain, wisdom says there's a certain spectrum from which we can operate and still be mindful. And then when we get overwhelmed, we're lost, right? We're just, it's too much. I would say what I usually do is I just stay with my body and I start mentally noting my sensations inside. Ooh, contraction, contraction, heat, heat, anger is present. So I'm silently noting to myself. And I pretty much disengage from the conversation for a moment, even if it's 10 seconds. Real time. Oh, fear. Yesterday I had a reaction, an intense reaction. It was really weird. A family member was looking for water. I offered my water bottle and they were like, no, pandemic. And I felt so hurt. I got really angry at first, but I was like, anger was arising. It was really intense. So I was being with my, I said, oh, okay. And I put my water bottle down. But I noticed all these internal sensations. It was really hard. And then as I sat with them for longer, I realized I just felt, rejected because I wanted to feel connected. And it was really a strange thing, silly little thing. But I had to bring loving, kind compassion. So when you get lost in your sensations, then you need compassion. So what would compassion do? Ask yourself, what would compassion do? Compassion would say, take care of yourself in whatever way you need to. Thank you so much. I'm sorry. I need to take care of myself. I'll be back in this conversation. It might be sitting quietly. It might be just putting your hand on your belly or your chest or both and just breathing deep breaths. For me, quiet usually helps. So I usually get really quiet. To stay in there with somebody. But thank you so much. Great questions. You guys have been wonderful. Love to see all your names from all over the world and all of those I recognize. Thank you so much. Let's do our dedication of merit. May whatever benefits we have tapped into today through our collective practice, really sensing the depth of all of our practices together as one. Feeling that in your body, if you could take on the benefit of all the people in the Sangha and share your benefit with everyone else. Feeling it in your body. May we all be embodied. May we all act with wisdom. And may we all be at peace. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Thank you.